And my father decided, you know, to have women all over, not pay the rent. We moved 17 times when until the age of 8. Imagine 17 times, you're never stable. And then my mama had to come to the United States because she actually made the decision that not many women would make in that era where she got divorced. She said, I can't do it anymore. So she decided to come to the United States with my two older brothers and left the three little ones in the Dominican Republic, and that included me. So to make a long story short, we were all spread out in different places. But a year later, my mom and my brothers were able to make enough living so that they could have a little home for us, for the three of us. And they hired this person to take care of us. Her name is Paula. She's still in my life. She's like a second mom. So my father was told the only thing you have to do is actually buy food for the children. And he would miss out on buying food. So there were Christmas that all I had was grape and bread. But I was happy because I was together with my brothers. So for me, that was happiness. Unfortunately, my father made a decision one night that changed my life.
Welcome to Parenting Teens Today with Jessie LeBeau.
I am so excited to introduce everybody today to the one, the only, the magnificent Maria Trusa. How are you doing?
Hey, Jesse. Well, Jesse, being here with you, it's something that is very exciting to me because teenagers, I happen to love them. And I have one at home. And I have learned to really connect with teenagers, which is something that I had to learn. So to be able to share this with your audience, for me, it's a dream. So I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you here. Now, you're doing a lot of amazing things right now. You're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you're a child advocate for representing the voiceless, which I love so much. But can we go back in time and can you tell us a little bit of how you got to be where you are today and how it all started?
You know, I have been telling my story over probably 500 times by now. And
wow.
And I talk about it how mentally I have to prepare, like whenever I'm going to go to my childhood, because unfortunately, you know, like many millions of children, you know, that go through traumatic experience in their lifetime, their body keeps a score. And my body keeps a score. And I've actually have been working really a lot on my healing. And even someone like me that has been on healing steroids, as I call them, because I became obsessed with healing when I had my firstborn. So it all started in the Dominican Republic. You know, I was born and raised in the DR.
Right.
And although the DR is a beautiful country that I happen to love, and it has a lot of amazing, passionate people that are, you know, very loving, there is a lot of trauma in the Dominican Republic. And for me, it started very early in life where my father, who unfortunately was a good man that had darkness in him, and he became an alcoholic. And as an alcoholic, he became irresponsible. And as an alcoholic, he became numb to the pain of his family. And my father decided, you know, to have women all over, not pay the rent. We moved 17 times until the age of 8. Imagine 17 times, you're never stable. And then my mama had to come to the United States because she actually made the decision that not many women would make in that era where she got divorced. She said, I can't do it anymore. So she decided to come to the United States with my two older brothers and left the three little ones in the Dominican Republic, and that included me. So to make a long story short, we were all spread out in different places. But a year later, my mom and my brothers were able to make enough living so that they could have a little home for us, for the three of us. And they hired this person to take care of us. Her name is Paula. She's still in my life. She's like a second mom. So my father was told, the only thing you have to do is actually buy food for the children. And he would miss out on buying food. So there were Christmas that all I had was grape and bread. But I was happy because I was together with my brothers. So for me, that was happiness. Unfortunately, my father made a decision one night that changed my life, the life of our family, with one decision, one choice. And it was that in the middle of the night, he was picking up my little brother that was 4 years old and taking him with his friend who was a witchcraft man. And this is 50 years ago. I was nine years old. And I grabbed my brother from my father and I said, "You're not taking him." And my father grabbed me and said, "Then you go." And unfortunately, my father left me with this man where he did witchcraft. And the man forced me to drink a bottle of whiskey. Nonstop, a bottle of whiskey. A nine-year-old little body had to swallow it nonstop. And then after that, he took me to a motel and he brutally raped me. Brutally. Destroyed my body to the point where I had to have surgery. My right ovary got twisted in my fallopian tubes. And I can tell you, Jesse, that at the age of nine, I wanted to die. Yeah. I wanted to die. And I know it's a lot, and it will be a lot for some of you out there that might be listening or watching us. I know this is hard to hear, but I decided that I did not want to be a statistic anymore. I wanted people to feel the pain because my pain is the pain of millions of children. And we have to say no more. Pain brings change. And that's the reason, Jesse, that I'm so graphic about it. I'm graphic in my book because I don't want to sugarcoat it anymore. This is ugly. This is ugly.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Do you mind if I ask you, how long did you hold on to that before you started opening up and sharing that with
47 years.
Wow.
I left the Dominican Republic when I was 15 years old, but not only that. So I come from a very small little town and there were very few people in this town. So everybody knew what happened to me, to the point that I was looked at with pity. So what I end up doing is I begged my mom to take me out of the town and she brought me and my brothers to a bigger town in Santiago. Nobody knew me. So that became the beginning of a new life where I will never talk about what happened to me. My family will never talk about it. This was 47 years of keeping this to myself.
Wow. And when you did make that decision, what was the thing that pushed you to be like, "I don't want to hold this inside anymore. I want to put this out into the world so that I can help other people"? Was there a moment that happened?
Yeah. So I was with my kids skiing in Colorado, and I was waiting with my son, Jeffrey, who's my middle child. He's 35 now. And Jeffrey said, "Mom, I want you to write a book." Because by then I had shared with my children. That was it. Because I was always afraid. Up to that point, I turned 52, I think it was. Up to that point, I would not share with anyone, but I always had it in the back of my mind that, what about if my children hear about this from someone else? And this is like a huge part of my life.
Yes.
So I ended up, both of my boys knew, and he begged me to write a book. So I started writing. I decided to do this. And then I was in my home in Vermont. I have a home that I love. It's my escape. I call it Escapo, which means to escape. So we escaped to Escapo, and I brought with me 10 Latina women that I like to empower, especially the Latino community, being a Latina, knowing, you know, the life of an underserved woman and the struggles that, you know, we confront being a Latina. So when I was in the jacuzzi with these women, telling them that about my story, that I was writing this book and that it was going to come out. And I told them my story for the first time. A lot of them knew me for years and they were in shock, but the shock came to me when each one of those women, out of the 10, 8 were sexually abused when they were children. 8. That was the first time. It actually, the name of my book is I Say No More, Yo Digo No Más, and the name of the movement too. And that was born that night because I was screaming, saying, Yo Digo No Más, Yo Digo No Más. I couldn't believe it. And then after that, it was like a trickle effect where I ended up hearing from so many people as I started doing public speaking engagements and started talking about the book. And it's a silent pandemic, Jesse. It's a silent pandemic.
Yeah. And I've even seen that in my life. When I went to college, I went from a small town and I was at a school in California. And I would get to meet all these people. And just because I was so inquisitive and I don't know if people felt safe, but they felt that I genuinely cared and was listening to the things that I was asking. It seemed like almost every girl that I met during that time, you know, at least a way over 50% had some type of similar situation. And so it is so much more common, I think, than people realize. Like you're saying, 8 out of 10, it's more common than not uncommon.
Yep.
So and I know in the Latino community, it's even worse. So for you, when you made that switch, which is such a huge thing to do as an adult, holding something in for 47 years, how did it change your life, good or bad, once you started being open and vocal about what happened to you?
The freedom that comes from authenticity, it's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
I decided that my book was going to be a book of complete authenticity. I actually had to tailor the book. I edited it 3 times. And the last time was edited by a lawyer, an entertainment lawyer, because I told my kids, I said, look, you want me to write this book, this will be my opportunity of letting it all out, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because I wanted it to be a teaching book, a book of hope and healing. And if I cover the ugly, then people would really not believe it. It's like there's ugly in every one of our lives. There's dark, there's light. We are born, there is both in life for every single human being. So when I started writing, when I wrote the book, and I finished, I'm telling you, you guys want to hear a book where there's no filters. I mean, the filters that I took out were the filters that could, you know, belong to another person, basically. I wanted to make sure I don't get sued because the message is more about learning from the experience. So when I talk about the things that I did because of my trauma, because I got to see it at the stage where I wrote the book, you know, I had just turned 55. So I could see that the things that I did were part of the trauma. And I wanted people to see that even the person like my father, what he did, I'm sure he never would imagine that he would have done. He did it at a dark place in his life, where he lost his soul and his soul got stuck in a tunnel of darkness. And he made a mistake that cost him his entire life, basically, because he lost all of us. We're 5 and I never saw my father again. So then I made mistakes like when I talk about, and this is something that for me is even hard to say it now, but for me, when I have a 40-year-old son, I'm actually in his house because I have to babysit the grandkids this afternoon.
That's so crazy to believe.
Yeah, so I'm in his house, and this kid is my best friend. We actually do retreats together. But to tell you that kid, when he was born, I had zero connection to that boy because to me, it was another boy. And men hurt me. And the child cried. He was the most difficult child. And Jesse, one night, I took this child because I was exhausted and I couldn't take it anymore. And I took this child and threw him in the bed like he was garbage. Mm. And he fell on the floor, my three-month-old baby. Mm. And Jesse, that's a story that most people will never share because I didn't have to share it because nobody knew this happened except me. But I said, I want people to see that even me, that I consider myself a good soul, a beautiful soul, and I thought I was then. This is what trauma does. Trauma is ugly. Trauma mm-hmm. destroys life. And when we come from sexual abuse as a child, the destruction, when they steal your innocence, it is, I would say, one of the most horrific crimes this than when an innocent gets stolen, because that God-giving gift of an innocence is what helps you create. It's like, this is your future. You're creating, you're playing, you're role-playing. It's, and that is stolen. There's many adults, teenagers, many of them suffering from depression, anxiety, self-harming, you name it. And a lot has to do with the trauma that they've gone through.
Yeah. I just want to commend you for being so brave. This is so beautiful and just such a powerful thing for so many people who have dealt with trauma, whether it's sexual abuse or anything else. You know, people are impacted in so many ways. And what you said about innocence really resonated with me. Because I've been saying that on a smaller scale, it feels like a lot of kids are losing their innocence younger and younger. I go and speak at a lot of schools, and it used to be at high school age is when a lot of these decisions are being made, whether it's about sex, whether it's about drugs or alcohol and substances and these things that can really send them down a direction of destruction. But as I've gotten further into this, it starts to get younger and younger, and it's the middle school kids, and now it's the elementary kids, schools, age kids who are having these things thrown in their face because they're seeing them on their phone and they're seeing them on other kids' phones if they don't have one. And I always saw that we would have these kids come from Africa, usually really good at basketball, to our school when I was in high school. And there was something just different about them, other than the obvious that they were from Africa. But they had such just a light. And it was that youthful exuberance, that innocence, it hadn't been taken from them. And it really is such an incredible thing. So I just want to acknowledge you for what you're doing. And I know from when I go speak, I always thought, especially early in my career, it was, I'm going to talk about the cool things that I've done that made me look great, the achievements, the awards, the being on TV and that kind of thing, right? And you think you need to do that or else they're not going to think that you're worthy to listen to. Like, who am I to talk to these kids? But the truth is, the thing that kids come up and share with me afterwards the most about is me talking about being bullied and me talking about going through hard times and feeling lonely and not fitting in. And it really is the thing that people connect with. So I think in your story, it's so amazing because there are so many people that are hurting. And when you can come out and you can have your life really together and you really made something and then you're doing more to help other people, it's so awesome. I wanted to ask you, as far as having kids, do you feel like that helped you be strong and get past some of these really difficult things? Do you think that was an advantage?
So now I see it as an advantage, but I can tell you that we have to be careful with what the results of trauma. So one of what happened to me was I became someone that hated pity. Mm. I disconnected from emotions. You could treat me like garbage. You could hurt me physically, mentally, and I felt nothing. Mm. So I got involved with toxic men. I got married at the age of 17 to a very possessive, aggressive man, Dominican. I talk about it in my book openly, abused me. And I took it because to me, there was a disconnection from my soul. You know, when you said the light, that light, I mean, it chokes me. You know why? Because that light gets stolen from a child and the lights get turns off. And to turn it back on, shit, it's so much work. Yeah. It is so much work. And that's why I would say 80 or 90%, if I'm doing statistics from my own experience of talking to people, they don't recover. And yeah. They don't get to utilize their superpower because I am a superhero. For me, my superpower became that resilience. I switch the inability to feel. Once I understood it, that I was disconnected from my feelings. And now I utilize that when I need to. And I bring it on. And I know, for example, I just went in 2021, my daughter at the age of 13 became extremely depressed, clinically depressed, self-harming, tough situation for me. And I can tell you, and we can talk about that because I think this is something that I openly talk. My daughter talks about it too. You should interview her because this kid is amazing. The transformation that she's going through. But when she was going through this, I knew I would bring my little girl. My little girl's name in the Dominican Republic was Jackie. And I actually even changed my name when I came to the United States. I didn't want Jackie. I was leaving everything behind. I thought I did, but you carry it with you. Yeah. So later on, it became a superpower because I understood that the resilience level, my resilience is through the roof. I am extremely laser focused and I bring that disconnection to my advantage. But unfortunately, that also disconnected me from especially my boy, Jeff Franco, but he became my catalyst. So yeah. I realized that I wanted to be connected to this child more than anything, in that what I was feeling was so ugly that I couldn't understand it. So he became an accelerator in my life for healing my son, mm-hmm. Franco.
Wow. Moms are amazing. And I talk to so many moms on these calls, finding out situations that's going on with their kids and their families. And so often I've found that one of the reasons they end up leaving, they end up getting divorced and going on their own, is actually because they love the kids so much and they want to protect them from a situation such as some of these past relationships that you were sharing about, where it's, this isn't a safe environment, this isn't a healthy environment, this isn't a healthy relationship that we're modeling. And where I would thought a lot of times that people would stay together to try to make it be the best situation for the kids, when really it's the exact opposite of that. So that's why I was kind of curious about what you saw in that. For someone who has been through something traumatic or has a kid who has been through something difficult, what are some suggestions you would give from your experience? I know you closed off emotionally. You didn't talk about it for 47 years. Would you recommend doing the complete opposite of that? What do you say to these women and these families that you work with and help when they've been through these things?
Yeah. Number one, we have to get curious. Like if we're having results that we're not happy with, then we didn't have the control of writing the story and rewriting it when we were kids. We came with a clean page and somebody wrote it for us. And unfortunately, the people that wrote it for you are people that have their own transgenerational trauma and they're passing it along in the pages that they're writing of your life for the first few chapters of your life. So now I can tell you that one of the things that accelerated healing for me was that I became very curious, very curious. If I'm not getting the results that I want, then I go back to me and say, what am I feeling? Where is this feeling in my body? What is this feeling in my soul? Why am I feeling anxious? What is this feeling like from the past? I become very curious, and I am obsessed with reading. So I've become my own therapist. Like, there are so many incredible Audible books. So I started, because to me, I've too much going on. So for me to sit and read, and I'm a slow reader, it doesn't work. So I listen to Audible books. I listen to podcasts. So yeah. I'm always educating myself, because, and I do it from a place of curiosity. Like, I'm listening to learn. And when I feel that, like, I'm 100% sure of something, that this is what I feel because of this, this, and this, then I go to the beginning and I say, why am I feeling this? Am I really, but I do it with love, kindness, and respect for myself, because that's the difference. It's not about beating yourself up, because what we do with the tendency is, because I lived it, it's like, you're stupid, you're not smart, how do you make that mistake? What the heck is wrong with you? All you do is, you're a loser. Like, you have these conversations. I shifted from love, kindness, and respect. And then I go and I become curious by being led with that kindness and love for myself, and then the respect for myself. So I make sure I don't say anything negative to me. It's like, I love me now. Yeah. It took me a long time to get to that place of love, but I wouldn't have done it if I did not become curious. We have to become curious. When you feel that you have all the answers and that is your way or the highway, it's the highway for you. Because let me tell you, you're going to go in that highway that is, you're going to go 100 miles per hour, getting destroying everything that is in your way. And that's why we have to slow it down. Yeah. And I know, for the purpose of this, because I like to give as much as I can, and I squeeze the time that I'm being given, because I feel that one word, one sentence could make a difference for someone. So, but normally, if you were to speak with me, I talk a little bit less, you know, fast. Yeah. But but because I believe in slowing it down. So my number one advice for mothers is to put yourself first. Numero uno, number one, nobody comes before you. And the irony is, I've taught my kids that. So my children now have kids, two of them, and they practice the same thing. I spend 2 hours with me every morning, 2 hours. Including when I had a child that was in the hospital that wanted to die. I spent 2 hours with me training for an Ironman, because that's the other thing that I said. If I can explore other limits and break other limits, then that helps me in every area of my life. So I decided I was going to do an Ironman. Never swam before, never cycled before. And I did it.
At what age?
Last year.
Last year. Wow. Okay.
2022. 2023 was a year in October. I went to Augusta, Georgia, and I did a 70.3 Ironman. I swam in the river, the Havana River, for 50 minutes. Jeez. And I did it in 7.5 hours. And let me tell you, that was while I had a daughter that was going through a major depression, clinically depressed, going to court to get full custody of my child, fighting for her right to make the decision who she wanted to be with. Because unfortunately, I'm divorced. I chose a very difficult father for my daughter. I chose him. Yeah. And, you know, I with love kindness, I understand, you know, this was my choice. And that led my daughter to where she was at. But while I was going through all of that, I put myself first every single day. And then I had the strength to deal with anything that would come my way. And I practiced that every single day. The least amount of time I spend with me is an hour and a half. And if I have to adjust anything else in my life to make sure that I have that time with me, I do it, because that time reinforces the pillar of my body, my family, my spiritual pillar, because I meditate every day, my joy, because to me, that brings me joy, and the pillar of my finances. Because let me tell you, when I go to my business, I own a medical center and an urgent care. I have a nonprofit organization that I've gave of my money $1 million to. So I've reached amazing success in my life and continue.
Yeah.
But I am numero uno, number one. Nobody comes before me, because I'm doing that for me, but I'm also doing it for my family. I'm doing it for my employees. I'm doing it for my community, because I show up the best version of myself every day.
I love it. That self-care is so important. And it's like we always say, you got to put your oxygen mask on first, right? You got to fill up your cup so that you can pour into other people's lives. If you aren't doing the things that you need to do, you're not going to have that $1 million to donate to help all these people that you're helping. So I think that's so amazing.
Self-care is underrated.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm living proof.
Yeah.
Take care of you. Your focus.
The sky is the limit.
It's exactly.
So I'm curious to hear about your daughter and the depression and self-harm that you were talking about. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that experience and see what we can learn from what you learned in your situation?
Yes. You know, my daughter, what I had to deal with my daughter, I never dealt with it with my two boys. I never imagined that I was going to deal with what I faced with her a few years ago. She started self-harming. She was, and by the way, I tell her story because she is telling her story. So I respected it. You know, I share that I was going through struggles, but it was on my side because I can tell everything about my life, but it's her life. And I'm allowed to tell the story because she talks about it openly.
So
she started self-harming at her dad's house. And unfortunately, it got really bad until I realized that it was really bad. There are tools that parents can learn that instead of cutting, that they can put an orange and freeze it and hurt themselves this way, because unfortunately, that's going to take time. Anyway, Jesse, I've said so much,
I appreciate you being so open and vulnerable. I'm curious, your daughter, as she's going through these different things in the past couple of years, did she have other friends at school or in her friend group that were also struggling and trying to figure out these same things?
There's a pandemic of children out there quietly suffering. And what happens is also, Jesse, my daughter did not go to school for 4 months prior to graduating from middle school. She graduated because she was an incredible student and the school decided to give her graduate her anyway. Then she went to this school, an upper school, private school, I was concerned about it, but she wanted to try it. And when she went there, she was not herself. She was this very dark child, very, very dark, head down, dark hair, the clothes, everything. She was in a dark, dark place. And you know what people did? Nobody wanted to talk to my child. She had no friends. She ate with the teachers. To this day, I'm changing school for her, because the irony is, Jesse, that they got to see my child at her worst time. And when you look at my daughter, and people can go, you know, and look at my Instagram, social media, because we post in LinkedIn, I have a post of my daughter when she was in her dark place, and then another post of where she's at now. She's gorgeous. She's back to singing, piano, guitar. She's an amazing musician. She's back. But even though she's back, they remember her as weird, and weird is not cool. So these kids, even when they're struggling by themselves, self-harming, you don't even know it because they don't want to look weird. My daughter just unfortunately went to another level of depression, and she couldn't even hide it. But the loneliness that these kids are going through, even me as a parent, I felt lonely, very lonely. And I had support. But it's a lonely depression and anxiety and all these cutting and all these things that the children are going through right now. And social media doesn't help. I know it doesn't because it's out there. Thank God that, you know, I don't know if you know, but the government stopped Facebook and Instagram from posting and TikTok from posting self-harming videos. Anybody under the age of 18. But this is all out there for our children to see.
Yeah, that's something we talk about all the time on here, is there is undeniably an epidemic of loneliness, especially amongst young people. We're more connected than we've ever been with the phone, but we're truly more disconnected, and more kids are struggling, just like your daughter, with these things, trying to fit in, not having their community, their tribe, their people, their close group of friends that they can spend time with in person and belong to something bigger than themselves. What was your daughter's relationship with social media at 13 when these things started coming on? Did she have social media? Did she have a phone? I'm just playing curiosity
now. No, she did. And as, you know, we have parent protection, whatever, but they find it. This is the reason is, look, we can protect as much as we can with the phone and all the tools that exist. And there are many tools, and we need to educate ourselves. And I got to tell you, that it's not like I was perfect at it. The phone, it's not going to go away. So we just have to learn to connect with our children more than ever. Yeah. The conversations that I have with my daughter are non-judgmental. I listen to learn. What does she need? Not how does she need me to support her? Not how do I need to support her? That's a different, there's a big difference. And this is where us as parents, because I know, because I made the mistake, you know, I thought I knew how I needed to support her. No, I learned how do I need to support her for her, not for me, for her. And that validation of feelings, validating that their feelings are real, not telling your child, look at the life that you live. When I was your age, look at all that I had to go through. Or you live such a privileged life. Look at where you live. Look at the home. That doesn't matter. Because this is a matter of the soul. Guys, it's a matter of the soul. So we have to treat it from soul to soul. Yeah. And that, as a parent, takes a lot of learning. And really get letting the guard down, because ultimately for me is I want my child happy.
I'm real curious. We work with kids, right? And we have 28 life lessons that we walk them through throughout the course of 90 days. Or in schools, we do a curriculum and it has these same 28 life lessons. And one of them that is something that you don't normally learn in school is about the power of forgiveness. And I have experienced it in my own life, where it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders and the clouds parted, metaphorically, of course, and amazing opportunities in my life changed overnight from something that I held on to for a long time. And I was wondering, is that something that you've been able to do in your life?
I mean, you see my smile.
Yeah.
That's my language. So my brand is Forgive to Live. Forgive to live. And I'm actually, I do retreats in my home. Remember I mentioned Escapo. So I do retreat for women. I get a lot of mothers and young mothers and mother, young girls wanting to be mothers. And it's my retreat is called Forgive to Live.
Can you tell us real quickly, just a little bit about some of the advocate work that you're doing as well?
So with Yo Digo No Más, I Say No More, we are protecting the innocence of our children. I do, we're doing conferences, like April is the month of bringing awareness of this pandemic of sexual abuse. And we are doing a conference at Westchester Community College. This is where I went to college here in Westchester County, New York. We are doing an all-day conference where we teach the pillars of Yo Digo No Más is to break the silence of the silent pandemic so that we can start breaking the chains of sexual abuse, because this is something that we've normalized with silence. And the other one is educating. So part of the education is I'm working on creating a curriculum where we're starting to teach children how to protect their body and how to protect themselves from sexual abuse, but from the beginning of school, obviously in a very, with psychologists that are, it would be child appropriate. And then we're teaching the parents. So we're working on the curriculum. We also are walking on April 27th in the city of Yonkers, New York, where we're starting to walk. A thousand people showed up the first time. This is our third year. Wow. And we're doing this work to make sure. And then the healing, you know, a lot of what I do in Vermont, there's a lot of healing that happens there. My book is the healing tool that I donate to the movement. So whoever buys the book, I Say No More, it's donating money to the movement. But my book is a healing book. What I share with you, Jesse, there's more depth that I share in that book. So Forgive to Live. I love it.
I love it. Where's the best place for people to find out more about you, where you're at? Is it your Instagram? Is it website?
My website is mariatrusa.org. My Instagram is maria_trusa because I was blocked from Facebook, Instagram. I had to start over again because of the message that I carry against sexual abuse. They even blocked my WhatsApp. Jeez. Crazy. But people can find me there. It's, you know, I if you can Google me and you can find all the work that I'm doing, because I'm obsessed with helping other people heal, including children.
So good. I just appreciate you for how you show up in the world and choosing to use your story to help empower other people. I think it's one of the most beautiful things a person can do. Can I ask you one last question? Okay, if you were going to go back in time and you were going to give yourself one piece of advice, it could be you as you're coming to America and kind of having this chance to start your life over again. It could be you as mom starting down that journey of parenthood. What would be the thing that you would tell yourself knowing what you know now?
There is magic in every single day. There's magic. And the magic is understanding that every experience that you go through in life is connected to another greater experience. And that sometimes when you least expect it, it's like, wow, that happened. I can get it now because of what I went through. I have every night when I go to sleep, I write on my journal that is today's magic. I've been doing this for years. And I love it because some days I write one thing, some days it's five. But I always write the magic that I found that day, because there's magic in every day. And then what happens to me is that every day, no matter how bad it is, and I already share, I've gone through some really hard time. Even recently, I was looking for the magic. I was looking for the magic. So that would be the advice. If I knew then this, I would be... Oh, my goodness.
Different experience,
endless. Right? Endless possibilities.
You're so good at I see a couple things at taking just extreme ownership for every area of your life and showing up with a lot of love. Even as you're talking about your daughter, it's like, I don't know, I need help. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to learn about therapy. I'm going to listen to audiobooks. I'm going to do the work. And I think that's just such a powerful example, because so many people are like, well, I don't know, and they throw in the towel. But if you want something bad enough, you're going to develop that resilient and grit to get through and figure it out. And I think that's such a thing. And we always say attitude is everything. And I really just think that's another way of saying find the magic. How can this be a good thing that we just went through? Maria, you're amazing. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. And we're going to have to do this again. I feel like we have a lot more to talk about.
Thank you for the work you do, Jesse, because your work is desperately needed. So continue doing it. Thank you. I personally, as a mom, I want to thank you.